Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. The cost of health care has become something of a crisis here in Alaska, both in terms of the cost that we pay when we go to the doctor and the cost we pay for health care insurance. I've been writing about it in my columns in the Alaska Dispatch News, and I've received a flood of response from readers with their own anecdotes about what health care is costing them and how it's forcing them to change their behavior in terms of the jobs they're taking or even leaving the state because of the high cost of health care. And of course, it affects our state budget and many other factors in Alaska as well. So our topic today is the cost of health care, both in terms of insurance premiums and the cost of the underlying care. And we'll welcome your calls to tell us about what you're facing in your life with health care costs, insurance costs, and any changes that it may have forced you to make in your life. And then also, I hope we'll talk a little bit about potential solutions and where we can go with all this. It's a big topic for an hour, but I've got two wonderful guests who can give us a lot of insight on the topic. Lori Wing-Heyer joins us by phone. She's the director of the Alaska Division of Insurance, and thanks for being with us, Lori.
Thank you for having me.
And here in the studio, Muhsin Gutabi is assistant professor of economics at the Institute of Social and Economic Research at University of Alaska Anchorage. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So just to start off, Muhsin, with some of the statistics that kind of will put this issue in perspective, where does Alaska rank nationally in terms of the cost of healthcare here?
Well, if we were to eliminate D.C. from the conversation, Alaska has the highest per capita cost of expenditure on healthcare. And just to add some numbers to that, we spend about $9,200 per individual. When you think about overall healthcare expenditures nationally, that averages about $6,500. And so whether we look at just that or you look at healthcare premiums, for example, health insurance premiums, there is a pretty significant difference in that as well. And so we did a survey of employers 2 years ago, and we found that the average single individual premium is about $13,000 per individual. Nationally, that's about $10,000. And so that's at the individual level. And so both firms and individuals are bearing a pretty considerable brunt of this healthcare differential, right? And so, and one of the things that we've discussed in the past is that it's not just that we tend to have higher costs, it's that the rate at which our costs are increasing is higher than just about every other place, right? And so the healthcare crisis, as you term it, is not an Alaska problem, it's a national problem, potentially an international problem. But we happen to be an outlier even in this increasing cost
right.
That's happening nationally.
So healthcare in the United States costs more than any other country. Healthcare in Alaska costs more than anywhere else in the United States. And we're starting to see the impact of that on people's lives as healthcare becomes unaffordable.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I always like to highlight, and I think it's really important, is that, as I was saying, 55% of us or so get insurance from an employer, right? Which means that it masks some of that cost to a certain extent, right? And so when you think about the overall premium, monthly premium that an employer pays, right, it's about $900 or so. Employees typically pay about 10 to 15% of that. So you don't actually see a big dent when it comes to your contribution to the premium. But a comparison that's meaningful is when you see what's happened to overall premiums relative to wages.
Mm-hmm.
And that comparison to me is the one that tells the most interesting story, because overall premiums have been increasing, median income has flattened. And so
we could be getting raises. Instead, all the money is going to our health care.
That's a perfect summary of it, right? And so you may not be contributing considerably more as the employee share of the premium. However, your take-home income is actually taking a hit because of these increases in premiums. And so it's an issue that's multifaceted. And like you said, it hits the budget, it hits employees, and it hits employers. And it affects the decision to start a business. It affects whether or not to stay at a company in which your skills are not perfectly matched. And so it's a multidimensional issue that has ramifications across the board.
Yeah. Well, let's turn to my other guest, Lori Wing-Heyer, who's the division of the director of the Alaska Division of Insurance. The area of this has been receiving headlines recently, Lori, is the individual marketplace, where folks who don't get insurance through their employer and don't get it through a government program are forced to go and find insurance. And those premiums have risen very rapidly, and the providers who have been in the marketplace have been withdrawing, presumably because they're not making money. What have you been doing in dealing with that crisis recently?
Well, there's no doubt we've had, it has been a crisis. Since 2014, we've lost three of the individual insurers in Alaska, and we're down to one, Premera, going into 2017. We've seen rates spike close to 40%, both in 2015 and in 2016. In 2017, as a result of Governor Walker's bill, HB 374, the reinsurance bill, we saw an increase in the Premera rates of 7.3%. Admittedly, it's another increase, but it's much lower than anything that was projected for 2017. Our statistics and or our filings and our data with Premera shows that without that bill, the rate increase would have been about 42%.
Wow.
The filings are, by statute, we have to make sure that the rates are adequate enough to cover the claims that are coming in. And of course, the claims are, as the previous speaker was talking about, are based on what the cost of health care is. And so you look at the underlying cost of the Alaskan health care system, you roll that up, spread it across the 23,000, the claims that are submitted to the 23,000 that are in the individual market, and it results in some very, very expensive premiums that people can't afford. So HB 374 was passed. It's another 7.3 increase, but it is in many, many ways an incredible result, immediate result to the what had been seen as another 40% increase to the individual market. It's the first step that we think in the individual market reforms. We're seeing other states mirror what Alaska is doing and looking at this type of legislation to put in a reinsurance pool. And what the legislation basically does is take the very, very sickest or the very highest cost claims out of that market so that the cost of the market is more affordable for that 23,000 that are in it to spread the cost amongst them. It's not going to bring costs down anytime soon, but it should stabilize them so that people know what the costs are going to be, that every year it's not going to go up another 40%.
Well, the costs are very high, and especially in these marketplace individual policies, some of the deductibles and out-of-pocket costs are very high, so that for many people, even middle-class folks, I think it becomes unaffordable. And so is that all being driven by just our very high healthcare costs, or is there something about the way the insurance market works that causes that?
It's a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. The insurance market itself, or the plans themselves, in order to even be what was considered affordable, have very high deductibles and copays. And in doing that, you've got the premiums, you've got the copays, or the cost sharing mechanisms within the plans. And in adding that to the premiums, people are looking at $24,000 to a family before they even get to the insurance.
Right. Not many of us can deal with that.
To many members, yeah. It's unacceptable.
Yeah. All right. Well, we sort of set the plate a little bit, and now I want to give out the phone numbers and email address so that listeners can get involved in our discussion. We've got a couple of top experts here to take your questions, and we're going to do our best with them. The phone number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, there's a toll-free number, 888-353-5752, and the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And my name is Charles Woolforth, and my guests are Mushin Gutabi, who's an economist at Institute of Social and Economic Research, and Lori Wing-Heyer, who's the director of the Alaska Division of Insurance. And we do have a caller who I'd like to bring on right now. Bill is calling from Anchorage. Bill?
Hey, thanks, Charles. Good show again. I think this is for you. I am insured through my employer, yet I can't get paid, get my naturopath paid. And it's because they're self-insured. Is that still in existence?
So the question is your employer is self-insured and they don't want to pay for the naturopath. Is that it?
Yeah. They used to pay years ago, and then they just stopped 1 year, and they said, no, we're not going to do that anymore.
So the question is there some kind of state regulation that could compel them to pay, you know?
Well, there actually is a law, but because they're self-insured, they don't have to pay.
I see. Lori Winghire, can you take that question?
I can take it. A lot of the self-insured plans are not controlled by the Division of Insurance. The Division of Insurance actually controls only about 15%, maybe 16% of the market. And the self-insured plans are not what we do. Who you can talk to is the Department of Labor. And if you call my office, the 269-7900, and ask to speak to someone in Consumer Services, they can tell you who the Department of Labor, ERISA, who you can talk to about a self-insured plan. We do get a fair amount of calls at our office, and we do have to refer them to the Department of Labor. It's not the State Department of Labor. It's actually federal, and they're down in Seattle. But we can refer you to talk to look at your self-insured plan and what should be paid under it.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. And now let's go to Karen, who's calling from Anchorage. Karen?
Hi. I'm trying to be, you know, good at cutting down the costs for the insurance company, for myself, but I'm having a very difficult time because I can't get the information from the doctors or the healthcare system. They won't give me the codes, and unless you have the right code, they won't cover you. I mean, just for a simple example, supposedly under the preventive system, I'm supposed to be able to get a cholesterol blood test, but like I was good and went to the, you know, health fair and got the cheapest cholesterol blood test you can find around town, and then Premier wouldn't cover it. But yet I can't get the right code of what is covered, but supposedly the code that's on the health fair form is not the right preventive code. So how do I go about getting this right information when no one will give it to me?
Yeah, this is a big problem, and it seems like it goes all through the system of consumers not really being able to get the information that will help them be effective in saving money. Can you answer that one, Lori Winghire?
Yes, I can. And I hate to keep saying Consumer Services, but I urge you to call the division. Part of one of the bills that was passed this year that the legislature passed, it's HB 372, and it is asking the division, we haven't quite got it in place yet, but we'll still be happy to help you as much as we can. It allows for us to do a utilization review, an external review, to help consumers with exactly this type of thing. The bill was signed this July. We're just putting the procedure in place, but in the meantime, we can still assist you with this particular concern of getting the codes and talking with Premier on your concern to get your claim paid or to see exactly why they're not addressing it.
All right. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you.
I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the causes for the high cost and peel back the onion a little bit. And it seems to me, Mohsin Ghotabi, one of the issues that I hear over and over again is lack of transparency, lack of competition, and the ability of, in this uniquely among all of our economic endeavors, that we go in and we have no idea what it's going to cost before we start. And I wonder if from your perception, is that a major driver of high costs, that there is this lack of competition?
Yeah, I think that before we talk about the specifics, it would have to be, right? And so when you think about any market, generally speaking, the more competition you have, the more options individuals have in a world where we have information, right? And the two callers here, I think, just make this abundantly clear that there is considerable lack of information in order to make these informed decisions, right? And so what physicians to see, what procedures to take, whether or not something is covered or not, are fairly basic things. And when you have small markets, that need for transparency becomes even exacerbated, right? Because the options are few. And I mean, that's one of the things, not to shift the conversation, but I go back to that survey that we did, and one of the things that we found is that there were considerably more employers that were sending their employees outside of the state to get care because they had more information and they could actually price compare, right? And so at its most basic, most consumers within the state can't even shop.
Right.
In terms of prices, right? But employers who have leverage, who have a bit more information, are starting to act on that information and are starting to make decisions that are helping their bottom line. But as of yet, I don't believe that there is the same ability at the individual level to obtain enough information in order to make decisions that will improve their welfare in general, right? And so, but the competition question is really interesting because from a very basic standpoint, if there are these considerably higher prices being paid in Alaska and there are no barriers to entry for physicians, then simple economics would tell you that there should be takers, right? We should be flooding the market with physicians that are providing services in order to take advantage of these higher prices. But that's not happening, right? Mm-hmm. And then the question comes back to,
why not?
Why not? What are these barriers to entry, if you will? What is being done to prevent entry, if anything? And then we get to policy, right? What can we potentially do in order to encourage competition and to encourage transparency? Because I think they go hand in hand, right?
Yeah.
And so if you have a lot of providers, if you have a lot of options, I think that transparency starts to fall out of it because you can do that comparison. You can shop around. You can talk to second and third doctors in order to get a sense mm-hmm. of what's going on.
So Laurie Wing-Hire, the director of insurance, are there mechanisms that the state has to create some transparency so that people can do that kind of shopping around, as Musin said? You know, even if you have a policy, but you have $20,000 you're going to pay annually, any of us, except perhaps the very rich, would certainly shop around. And if we need to have a procedure and it's not an emergency, we'd find out the best deal we could get under normal circumstances. But that's impossible the way the system is set up now. Is that something that the state has looked at, or is that something even within your power to create some transparency?
There's two things going on there. The transparency issue itself, we have started to look at, as several states have. It's not as simple as just asking doctors to put a pricing sheet out. I wish it was. I truly did. But we have had discussions with providers of how do we get transparency so exactly, as Usain has said, that people can look or shop for procedures to see exactly what they're getting for their money and to address, you know, how this will flow up to the cost of insurance. And we have received some providers that are not willing to, they don't want to participate in part transparency. Others,
well, I can see why, right?
Willing to, yes, exactly. Others are more willing to, but say it's going to be very costly to share transparency or to create transparency. And we don't want to create more cost within the system. So we're looking at ways to, and working with other states, such as Washington, Oregon, California, and others that have already created transparency laws, to see exactly how they did it and to what we can do in Alaska to perhaps model what Alaska is doing after our neighbors to the south to bring that north. Because the administration itself agrees that something has to be done to create transparency, because we do hear this a lot, that people, in having a choice, the choice should be how much am I paying?
Right.
And what am I getting for that cost? Other is that you brought something up of the emergency room, and sometimes the cost of the transparency is the in-network, out-of-network, and that's yet another layer of this that we've got to resolve.
Yeah, and I want to ask you some more questions about that, but I want to make sure that listeners know they can get in on the conversation as well. We're talking, and I'm going to give that the phone number out in just a moment. We're talking to Mohsin Ghatabi, who's an economist at Institute for Social and Economic Research here in Anchorage, and Laurie Winghire is on the phone with us. She's the director of the Alaska Division of Insurance. My name is Charles Wolforth, and the show is Hometown Alaska. If you have questions or comments about the cost of health care in Alaska, the phone number here is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, you can reach us toll-free at 888-353-5752. That's 888-353-5752. And the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. Laurie, from the point of view of the Division of Insurance and certainly the insurance companies themselves, you guys must know what procedures cost, because when those procedures are negotiated through the insurance plans, they have to pay at some point, right? So you may not know what it costs the provider to give those procedures, but you know what they're charging. And how do those charges relate to what people are paying in other states? In other words, is there any relationship between the higher cost of living in Alaska and how much hospital or doctor charges are inflated here?
I don't know that I can. I think perhaps Mohsin is better qualified to answer that. It's certainly higher. Is there a true correlation between the cost of living and the cost of health care? It's obviously, we believe, the highest cost of health care in the United States is in Alaska. How that relates to, is Alaska the highest cost of living? I don't believe so. So I don't think there's a correlation that equates to one equates to the other. We don't know that we understand why the cost of health care in Alaska is so much more than it is in the Pacific Northwest or any place relatively close to Alaska.
Right, or even very high cost communities like Silicon Valley and San Francisco and places like that.
Correct.
Mohsin,
we can't find the what's causing the cost.
Right. And I wonder if you have any ideas on that, Mohsin, from the economics point of view. What we talked about higher compensation for doctors. Our hospitals also are making higher profit margins, right?
Yeah, that report from 2011, that Milliman report, had found that the profit margins for hospitals were about a little more than twice what they are in these comparison states. And so they had used Washington and a few other states as comparison units. And they found that the margins were a little bit more than twice that. So yes, they're higher. We're also, I mean, when you do a decomposition of what we're actually spending money on, which is, you know, informative, but it doesn't actually get down in minuscule detail enough. We spend about, from that pie of overall health expenditures, we spend about 42% on hospital care. The national average is about 36%. Hmm. And so our physician care / hospital care is close to 75%. That same combination is only at about 68% nationally. And so that's really where the meat of the expenditures are happening. Now, to what extent is it that the physicians are price makers versus the fact that they actually have to pay higher salaries in order to attract and retain workers? That decomposition has yet to occur, right? And so, and that's what Laurie was alluding to, is what I always say whenever we end up having this conversation, is the two things that need to happen almost immediately is a decomposition of the cost, meaning what are the actual drivers and what share are each one of them responsible for? And then second, which of these drivers are actually policy sensitive, right? And so, because if it is indeed that we're paying so much more just because we pay so much more for everything else, then it's unfortunate, but it's not something that we can change. But that's clearly not the case, because there are aspects of this conversation that I believe are indeed sensitive to changes, right? And so mm-hmm. we talked about transparency, we talked about breaking down some of these barriers, understanding better who's actually setting prices, why they're being set at what they at the rates that they are. So
yeah, very good point. Let's go now to a caller. Keen is calling from Anchorage. Keen, did you have a comment?
Yes. My name is Keen Finnegan. I just had a comment about, you know, I hear a lot of discussion about cost, and I just wanted to kind of frame that into what you think the quality of care that we're receiving up here in Alaska. You know, there's a lot of, you either look at it two ways. We have high cost or we have, high quality. Is that the case, or do we have high cost and low quality? And so I just would like to have maybe the conversation framed in that regard.
I know there are records that are kept by Medicaid or Medicare on quality. Have you looked at that, Lucy?
No, I haven't looked at them, but I suppose one indicator that our quality is not superbly superior to other places is the point that I made earlier, is that people are actually going to other places now in order to get care, meaning that even if the quality was high, it's not high enough to compensate for the differential, right? And so because both companies and individuals are now seeking care in other places, I had a student do an analysis a while ago about medical tourism, and he found that even if you were to stay in the fanciest hotels, you could go to just about every country around the world and get the same procedure, and found some ratings across hospitals that basically showed that you could get similar quality care and you would still be paying less, right?
And so, and it's probably not possible to say what is the quality of healthcare in Alaska as a whole, because obviously it's a heterogeneous, and some will be higher and some will be lower. But I'm certainly of the impression, as Musin says, that we don't have like some vastly stratospheric level of quality that would explain our costs.
There is no indication, as far as I know anyway, that the cost is justified by considerably higher quality. Access is a different question, but...
Yes. Okay. Well, that was a good question, Scott. Keen, I'd like now to go to Paul, who had a comment about an experience he had. Paul?
Yes, good afternoon. Interesting conversation. A lot of our costs, I think, are just built in the inflexibility of the insurance companies and the procedures they have in place. Yesterday is an actual example. I went to Walmart to get a flu shot, low cost to do it, presented my insurance card, and was promptly informed that I had to go to a physician's office, pay for the appointment, and then they would cover the flu shot plus the physician's expense, which would be about $110 total. I ended up paying the $27 out of pocket just to have the flu shot done there. But it seemed like a nonsensical arrangement that had to be done, which basically quadruples the cost of the flu shot. And that's just a minor example.
Yeah, let's throw that one to Laurie Wing-Hire. I've gotten comments from various readers as well about, that they get a hearing aid through an audiologist, and it's a stratospheric cost where their copay is more than just simply going to Costco and buying the same hearing aid, and so they don't even use the insurance because the cost is so much lower. And so it seems strange to people that you can't take your insurance to Costco and simply get the hearing aid there, or in your case, the flu shot. Laurie Wing-Hire, can you comment on that?
I absolutely don't disagree that sometimes it's it doesn't make any sense in the way that insurance is utilized, or in the way that we have to use it to take advantage of what we paid the premiums for. I'd like to say I don't have a response to it, because I'm trying to figure out why they wouldn't accept it. The best I can advise consumers on this type of thing is to go ahead and submit the $27 billing directly to the insurance company and see what they say, because insurance companies, the majority of the plans require or pay for preventive care. But I know we get people calling on things like this, and things like the buying things that they can get at a much lesser price at places like Costco or such, and yet the insurance companies won't pay them because they're not a provider that they show in their records. And we take each one of these seriously and try to work through the process as to why they don't accept that provider in their records as they would a physician's office.
Yeah, it's a very strange thing and doesn't make any sense economically. And I think that's part of what creates the frustration. Now, partly the frustration is extreme cost, but the other part is like, couldn't we do something that makes sense? So we're going to talk more about that in the second half of the show. And we have some callers lined up, but I'll give out the phone number and email address for others who want to get on the air with us. Please stick with us as Hometown Alaska continues.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Hi, it's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. We're talking about healthcare costs today on the show, and I'm going to give you the phone number so you can get on the air with us. We have two illustrious guests who have given us a lot of insight on this topic. Muhsin Gutavi is an economist with the Institute for Social and Economic Research. He's in the studio. Lori Wing-Heyer is the director of the Alaska Division of Insurance. She's with us on the phone, and you can get with us too by calling 550-8433. If you're outside Anchorage, there's a toll-free number, 888-353-5752. And the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I've got several emails, but one that comes up all the time from Barbara that I want to put out to my guests here is this one. What about having a single-payer system? A great deal of money is thrown down the drain by having insurance companies as middlemen. And I guess a single-payer system also has the benefit that you essentially socialize the whole system so it can be controlled by one entity. I mean, that's sort of the idea behind it. I'm not sure we have the ability to do that in state law. Maybe we do. Lori Wing-Heyer, has there been any consideration of taking that kind of radical approach?
Every now and then we do hear from someone who proposes that legislation come up, you know, for a single-payer system at the state level, or even at the federal level. You hear that, you know, that's where we're eventually going to be. And every time this also comes up, we get a flood of responses that it's the best thing that could happen or the worst thing that could happen. The bottom line is that somebody's going to pay the cost of medical treatment one way or the other. If we pay it through insurance companies, which right now they're not making a profit, and we do go over their financials, or we pay it to the federal government through a program, the cost has to be covered. And our emphasis, we think, has to be on looking at the cost and working with other groups. The division doesn't have the statutory authority to deal with the cost of health care per se. We certainly want to be a part of it, but we don't have the statutory authority to tell doctors what to charge per se.
Yeah, and I have the impression that the existence of the single payer that we have now in Medicare and Medicaid is one of the things that's causing the cost of private health care to go up. Because I talk to doctors who say, "Well, we lose money on these Medicare patients." So we can only take so many of them, and therefore we make it up on our private patients where they can, in a lot of cases, just set their own price, or at least to some extent can do so. Do you think that's true at all, Lori? Muhsin?
We always hear about passing costs from, you know, one type of payer to another, right? And so we have an issue in Alaska with physicians even accepting Medicare patients because the reimbursement rates for Medicare are lower than they are for Medicaid, and they're lower than a lot of other states. And so this notion of passing costs is certainly something that, you know, needs to be looked at. But I agree with Lori in that the single payer is not a panacea. It's attractive. It's got its attractive features. But the reality is, if the underlying costs are indeed high, that money is going to be coming from somewhere, right? You can potentially make savings by getting rid of the intermediary, but the fundamental problem still remains. And like I said, I mean, I go back to the earlier point, if the growth rate of said cost continues to rise, it starts eating up at the growth state product or the budget or employee salaries. And so it may potentially simplify things or allow more transparency, but it doesn't address the fundamental issue that is cost.
Yeah. Let's go to another caller. Scott is calling from Anchorage. Scott, did you have a question?
I have a few comments, but not necessarily a question.
Go right ahead.
I came from the funeral industry, and their transparency is absolutely mandated. As a price list available up front, where comparisons are very easily done, and certainly funeral homes were not altogether willing to make their cost available to their or their prices available to their competitors any more than doctors are. The other deal is every time I get my insurance bill back and I see the huge savings that my insurance company has received for me with the hospital, it makes me angry because for many years I was a self-paid cash-on-the-barrelhead customer. It's inconceivable to me that the person that is able to walk out paid in full should be charged more than the person who has to go through the coding and billing and et cetera to receive payment 90 days to 120 days later.
Yeah, that is an extraordinary situation, and it leads to a lot of bankruptcies because most of us simply can't pay that kind of money that's on those bills. And it's a really good point. Thanks for your call, Scott. Now I'd like to go to a call from Lynn from Anchorage. Lynn?
Hi. Hi, I'm sorry. Well, I'm one of the people that's moving out of Anchorage after 25 years because my husband died, and I'm a blind individual. We're both blind. And we used to go down to Mexico for dental care. And also, that's how he got his hearing aids as well. And I think that these are real issues. And I've always heard that the reason that the costs are so high is because it's a small market. And we'll see how I do when I go down to Florida. But I do think that the quality of care, the cost of care, and especially, I once attended a seminar on medical effective communication in medical settings for people with disabilities, and that's a real problem all over the country. And I do think that some of these things in Anchorage, maybe they'll be fixed someday, but I don't think it's going to do anything for me, and I can't take the cold anymore, so I'm getting out of here at the end of the month of October. So, you know, it just was a decision I wanted to make a long time ago, but I had to help my husband who was suffering from cancer, and I had to help him, so... But now I'm done, so I'm leaving.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss, and it's a very sad story to see somebody leaving because of something like this. So thanks for sharing that.
You bet.
All right, let's go to another caller. Matt has a call from Anchorage. Matt?
Hi, my name's I'm calling from Anchorage. Like I said, and I just wanted to reiterate what some of the callers have said is that the system in Alaska is bankrupting our cities, our state, our people. And if, Lori, if you're not doing something to actively combat that, then you're not doing your job. We need you to stand up for us and maybe come up with creative ways to maybe hire doctors from the outside and bring them up and provide clinics to city workers, state workers, people that are buying from the private marketplace, and give another option than some of these doctors that are just, they're actually ripping us off, and you're allowing it to happen. And until someone does stuff like this, the doctors are going to keep ripping us off, the hospitals are going to keep ripping us off, and there's no one going to stop them, and that's just my comment.
Thanks, man. I hear your frustration, and I think a lot of people would share it, though I'm not sure directing it to Lori Winghire particularly is maybe You know, I'd like her to respond, but she's the director of the Division of Insurance, so she doesn't really control what doctors charge. And Laurie, I'd like you to respond to Matt's comment. And also maybe
I appreciate the comment. And while I am the director of the Division of Insurance, I certainly can take the comment back. And I'm a member of the Healthcare Authority, which is one of Governor Walker's projects, and he takes very seriously the cost of healthcare throughout the state. And I will definitely take the comment back. It's something we recognize. It's something that needs to be addressed. And I will take the comment back to the Healthcare Authority that various commissioners and others within the state sit on right now as we address this problem and let them know that what Matt had to say.
Do you feel like there is enough authority in law now to make changes that are needed, or are additional statutory changes going to be needed to do some of the things we've talked about in terms of transparency and cost controls and so forth?
I think there's going to have to be some. I mean, I'm not an attorney, but I think there's going to have to be some changes at some point made. I'm not even sure what they're going to be. We've looked at a variety of states over the past couple of years as to how to address this, and there's not an easy solution. I mean, states don't generally tell doctors what to charge, or hospitals. So it's a touchy subject of how do you get a state where this is going on, as has been addressed throughout this conversation, of how do you address it? Yeah. So we're kind of on the forefront here of addressing a huge problem.
Right, and this is an issue that I want to bring up with Musin as well. We've talked about it in the past in my reporting. Tom gets on board with this topic as well through by an email. He says, when providers say they lose money on Medicare, they mean they make less profit. But by saying it that way, they make us feel sorry for them. Remember that doctors as a group are the highest paid group in Alaska. Musin, the salary surveys show that doctors are indeed paid more in Alaska than other places, but not by, you know, 5 or 10 times, like some procedures cost more. On the other hand, those surveys don't really tell us about the doctors who are partners in practices or own their own practices. And I wonder if you've looked at the question of doctor compensation and to what degree you feel like that could be a cause of these higher costs.
This is one of those areas where, unfortunately, the data that we have gives a misleading picture, right? And so when you go by just wages and salaries, you're basically looking at physician salaries who are employed at a hospital and who get an actual paycheck. And when you just compare those salaries with the lower 48 or just specific comparison units, you find that there is a premium, but the reality is we pay just about every occupation a premium in Alaska, right? And so when you just compare that subsample, you find that the premium is not out of step with how much more we pay a lot of other occupations. The big missing gap is, like you've correctly stated, is that we just don't have access to physicians that are self-employed or that don't receive a paycheck. And so and that makes the decomposition incredibly difficult, right? And so how much of the cost is a result of physician salaries becomes an incomplete answer, essentially, because we're working with data that's maybe uninformative. And if I could, I just want to go back very quickly to something that one of the callers said earlier about her decision to leave the state. One of the things that we fail to recognize in this conversation is the macro consequences at the state level, right? And so we have a small share of the population that's over the age of 65, but it's growing very rapidly. And quality and access of care for people over the age of 65 could be compromised if there is nothing that's done. And we could lose a base of people that is very important for the state, not just because they spend a lot of money, but because they've been here, they have a tremendous amount of institutional knowledge. And so I just want to reiterate the point that some of these issues have far-ranging consequences, and they do influence the decision to start the business, the decision to move out of state. And again, for a subset of people, especially, for example, people with Medicare who are having issues getting seen by doctors because of those reimbursement rates you were talking about, that could lead to a mass exodus of people that would have very severe consequences for the state.
Very harmful, yeah.
Yeah.
Let me turn to you, Lori Wing-Hire, as director of the Division of Insurance. In other states, as I understand it, there are more health maintenance organizations where you might go to a doctor who's part of a sort of total organization that's going to help you from one end to the other. And that doctor is going to be on salary, and his compensation is not necessarily going to be based on doing a lot of procedures, but on your overall health. And here in Alaska, in our private marketplace of doctors, obviously not in the native health or area, we have a system where the doctors, especially if he owns a practice, can really make a lot more money by ordering more procedures, more tests, having you back more times. Why is it that we don't have those health maintenance organizations? Why have those solutions not come to pass here in Alaska?
I don't know that I have the exact answer, and I may have to get back to you on it. Right now, there is not an HMO in Alaska. And I believe, and again, I may have to come back and correct myself on this, that years ago, and I'm talking possibly pipeline days, that it was in statute that we do not have HMOs in Alaska. Why the decision was made, I don't know that I can tell you. I'd have to go back and research it. But
yeah.
It may be time that we look at HMOs or accountable care organizations where you do have a primary physician who takes care of you up to a point where you need to see a specialist, such as an HMO does. And then they recommend you have to see your HMO physician first before you go to a specialist, as opposed to what perhaps the primary care system is that we're dealing with in Alaska now. But right now there is not an HMO in Alaska. Are they less expensive? I don't know, because we don't have them in Alaska to know if they're more successful in reducing costs or not. We don't have those statistics. But I am sure that it was looked in at Alaska, and the statute does not allow for an HMO at this time.
I see. Interesting. Let's go to Stephanie, who had a caller comment from Anchorage. Stephanie?
Hi. I appreciate this conversation greatly. It affects my life personally and professionally. Thanks to the Affordable Care Act, I was able to leave my employment with a big employer with a pre-existing condition. I was one of 11 million people that was stuck in job lock here in the United States. I took COBRA for $560 a month for the 18 months I was eligible to get COBRA. And at that point, I looked into the healthcare exchange, and it would have been about $700 a month or so for me to have private insurance outside of COBRA. This January, I had no choice. My COBRA had run out, and I'm paying $1,292 a month for a silver plan, which is exceedingly high with, still a $2,000 deductible, and I'm really concerned about my ability to maintain my status with insurance with the way things are going. My understanding is, though, that when all this was coming on board, there was talk about Alaska combining with Washington State and being part of their exchange so that there was a larger risk pool, and I'm wondering if anybody can talk about the history of that and why we didn't go that route, and if that would be an option now.
Great question. Let's turn that to Lori Wing-Hire from the Division of Insurance.
At this point, there's not an option for us to combine with any other state. We have looked at possible compacts with other states. And particularly, I want to go outside the Pacific Northwest, but I just say the Western states because they tend to be more like Alaska in demographics, large, rural, rather sparsely dense populations. However, when we've looked at compacts, and it's not as easy as just combining because there are some regulations that have to be done, and some of it's at the federal level, although it is allowed under the ACA. Those states right now are performing fairly well. and they are not attractive to have Alaska into their mix. And that's just as honest as I can be.
Why would they want us?
They
right.
basically don't want us.
Yeah, that's what I thought might be the answer. Even if it was administratively easy to do, they'd kind of be crazy to take us on. It's Hometown Alaska. Yeah. We're talking about healthcare costs. Lori Winghire is on the phone. She's the director of the Alaska Division of Insurance, and Mushin Gutabi is in the studio. He's an economist with ICER. Michael sends this email, which I think it brings up a really interesting point. He says, I purchase health insurance for my staff through Blue Cross Blue Shield and get the best plan available to me as a small employer. My wife is with a large corporation and is also with Blue Cross Blue Shield. Her plan is approximately one-third of the cost, and she receives better coverage despite the fact that I purchased the best available to me and my group is small. My point is the insurance companies divide us up to maximize their charges. I pay more for less from the same insurer. Why is this allowed? And I we've talked a little bit earlier that Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield is a nonprofit, and their records don't show that they're making money in Alaska. But this does seem like an unfair situation where one company is charged much more for their insurance than another based on their size. Can you explain that to us, Lori Winghire?
Well, I'm going to take a stab at this because, you know, it's hard to just hear those comments and then say, okay, I can tell you exactly why. I'm going to guess that the small group that he's talking about that he's buying for his employers is an ACA-qualified plan, and that she's a large employer who's grandfathered and is probably not an ACA-qualified health plan and is self-insured, so that plan can have a little bit more control over the flexibility within the plan. And because it's grandfathered, it may be things within the ACA that they have not met yet because they don't have to. It doesn't mean it's a bad plan under any stretch of the imagination. It just means that there's a difference between a grandfathered plan and a plan that has to be ACA compliant. And a self-insured plan of where you've got 2,000 employees that you can spread the cost, or 2,000 employees and dependents that you can spread the cost over, as opposed to a small group of under 100 or under 50 employees.
I see, yeah.
And he may have a very, very rich plan under the small group, and she's got a much richer plan because she's a part of a very large organization, and it's probably self-insured. That's just my guess at what's going on.
Yeah, these are hard to, obviously we don't know all the details. Let's go to Mike, who has a call from Anchorage. Mike?
Hi. As I listened to the conversation, there's a couple of, a number of things come to mind, but two of them that I find interesting first one is that while the costs are so high in Alaska, I believe the largest employers in Alaska are the healthcare people, or the healthcare companies, hospitals.
Yeah, that's true. In terms of private employers, that's true.
And the other thing is that having been a receiver of insurance or paying for insurance both in the private market and also with Medicare now, the one cost that I wonder is if it's included when we talk about costs is the cost of searching for the information, you know, trying to find codes, shopping, figuring out how to fill out the claim forms, the enormous amount of time. And with Medicare, you don't have that. And, you know, it's just another factor that I think is important to talk about.
Right. There's quite a bit of administrative overhead in our current system. Hard to quantify, perhaps, but that's something that, Mushin, you've talked about trying to take apart this whole system and figure out what's exactly going on. And I've noticed here in the UMed district where we're located now, this incredible construction boom. And you wonder, well, how could we possibly afford that in this little state, right? And I guess that's an evidence of the money that's flowing into this system. But you've said that there's really not been a complete effort to take the system apart and follow the money and figure out exactly where it's going. And so a lot of these things we're talking about, we don't have answers to.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. I mean, there are some things that we should know that we just don't. There hasn't been an effort. I mean, there has been piecemeal efforts, and I've talked about our insurance, our survey of employers. I've talked about the Milliman report. I've taken a stab at some portions of this analysis, but there hasn't been a comprehensive effort to decompose some of these things and answer conclusively to what extent has the 80-20 rule actually increased cost, to what extent is physician compensation a problem, and if it is, what can be done about it. And I mean, to the caller's point, I study both healthcare and regional economics, and most of the time when I give talks, on the one hand, I say healthcare costs is a huge problem, and right now we're in the midst of a pretty severe slowdown, and yet one of the bright spots in the economy is healthcare, and healthcare employment keeps growing, right? And so it's this vicious circle that we can't seem to get out of. I mean, we're losing jobs in just about every major sector, and yet healthcare and retail and service industries keep growing. And so,
it doesn't seem sustainable.
It really is not. I mean, the share of expenditures going to healthcare keeps growing. The share of jobs in healthcare keep growing. And so that's certainly not sustainable. Right. Yeah.
Well, we have just a couple of minutes left. And rather than bring up any new topics, I'd like to let each of our guests give us some final comments on where they would like to see this discussion going. Obviously, it's one of huge importance that is a great concern to a lot of people. Lori Wing-Hire, do you want to take that one first as what you see happening from your perspective at the state level to dealing with the problem?
Well, I think we've got there's no doubt the administration realizes, that Governor Walker realizes, and certainly the Division of Insurance realizes, that the cost of health care is the contributor to the cost of insurance. We're looking at it from every angle we can. We have this saying, there's no such thing as a dumb idea, please bring it forward within the division itself to see what we can do to bring down the cost of insurance itself, because that's really what we focus on. But we do participate in meetings of stakeholders. We talk to providers. We talk to brokers. We certainly talk to consumers. And we are working right now on an innovation waiver to the federal government to look for funding to keep the reinsurance program going. We'll then look at other waivers that possibly could modify the Affordable Care Act to reduce costs itself. So we're open to ideas of what it can do to bring down the cost of insurance. And if some of that is, and hopefully will be, the cost of health care, then we're a stakeholder and want to be a part of it.
Great. Thank you so much for being with us, Lori. Muteen, in about 30 seconds, sounds like you're saying more research.
I'm saying more research because the asymmetries in healthcare are immense, right? Consumers know very, very little, and decision makers need to know what to do in order to design effective policies that are going to have the long-term health of the Alaska economy and the people in mind.
And we just don't have that information. Well, thank you to both of you, Muzin Gutabi from ICER, Lori Wing-Hire, Director of the Alaska Division of Insurance. Great job. It was a really interesting conversation. Sorry to those of you whose emails we didn't get to. Tried to cover all the topics, at least at some level. That's all for Hometown Alaska. Our producer is Dave Waldron. My name is Charles Woolforth. Thanks for being with us. Next week, we'll be back with your host, Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.